The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Hey, Gene.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
All right, man. How you doing?
Good. I guess we'll get started if you're set.
Okay, yeah. Tell me when you're ready, bud.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema. Tonight we're talking music with Chris Bennett of Widow on the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Focuses on film that matters, cult, grindhouse, drive-in, independent, and underground film from the dawn of the talkies through the early 90s. Tonight, we're talking music. We'll be speaking with Chris Bennett of Widow, one of the earliest and still one of the best bands of the retro-traditional metal scene. Starting way back in the late 90s, Chris and John Wooten came out of the death metal scene with a then-unheard-of passion for traditional 80s metal, and over the course of four albums, almost single-handedly created a scene that's thriving to this day out of their home base of Raleigh, North Carolina. With their third record referred to by Terrorizer magazine as one of the 10 best albums of the decade that sounds like it wasn't recorded in this decade, Widow has been blazing a trail and creating a moment in Raleigh, mirrored only by the Toronto scene for old-style melodic metal performed by up-and-coming young bands. Fans of melodic yet progressive metal in the tradition of Dokken, Crimson Glory, Leatherwolf, and Merciful Fate will surely want to tune in for this one. Join us for another of our discussions of the leaders of the retro traditional metal revival when we speak to guitarist and vocalist Chris Bennett of Widow. But first, just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, here's Widow with Lady Twilight. We'll be right back.
tonight we're talking music. Listeners to this show or at eye level should already be aware that I'm a diehard metal fan going way back to my teens. So I'm proud to say that we have with us this evening Chris Bennett, guitarist, vocalist, and band leader of one of the most prominent bands of the recent retro traditional metal scene, Raleigh, North Carolina's Widow. Chris, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's great to be here, man.
You know, there's really only been two bands that I felt really understood what made 80s metal sound the way it did, and that's Widow and Cauldron. You were the first band.
Oh, man, thank you.
You were the first bands from the retro thing that I really got into, and still the only ones I really stumped for outside of a new band from Toronto called Skullfist. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself here, but I thought that I should say that at the outset, that you guys are the real deal. You really get it.
Thank you so much, man.
For a band that's been around for at least a decade, there's not a hell of a lot out on the internet about you. I mean, you have a page, but it doesn't seem to have been updated since the On Fire days. Why such a low profile?
Well, it's funny that you said that. We actually did change our page now, and it has been sort of made better. And, you know, we've actually had some help, too, you know, from our management and stuff doing that. We're not any of us really computer geniuses or anything.
I mean, you know, because you got a great
band.
We're
lucky we have one.
Right. Because you got a great band, and you should be out there flaunting it. You know, like Lemmy said, run up the flagpole and see the salutes. But,
that's right. So, well, we've been working hard on that. I mean, for a while there, you know, we kind of used MySpace as like our homepage, I guess. And then, you know, and now we're using Facebook and Reverb Nation and all that stuff. And we finally got our website to where it basically links you to all that different, you know, all those different pages. So
right.
We're catching up with the new millennium. You know?
Slowly but surely. So let's start at the beginning with Midnight Strikes. I mean, you had the same basic sound right from the start, but it was very much like a horror movie orientation and more aggressive than the sound would become afterwards. There's also a few awkward moments where the harmonies aren't quite there. It gets a little non-traditional and distant, like in Empire of Thorns, for example. But I understand that the album is a definite following, probably because it was more consistently aggressive than your subsequent records. So this album actually got a re-release a few years later with a bonus disc of your demos. How did that come about?
Well, what happened, basically, we did Midnight Strike, and, you know, at the time, traditional metal was not really much of anything in the States.
Right.
I mean, there was really hardly anybody doing it.
Exactly.
And, but, you know, we love that music. That's what we wanted to do. That's where our hearts were at, and that's what we grew up on. So we just, you know, we started Widow, and we did that album with, it was with Tribunal Records, which is out of the same state as us, but, you know, they have really good distribution and it's a good label, and we've been friends with Matt forever.
Right.
Well, after a few years, it seemed like, you know, we did a couple more albums after that, On Fire and Nightlife. Well, after we did Nightlife, suddenly there was this huge interest in traditional metal, and, you know, we were just doing what we've been doing the whole time.
Right.
And Matt was like, man, people are constantly contacting me wanting to get Midnight Strikes. And it had been out of print for a while. And,
right.
I mean, you could get it on eBay or whatever, but it had been out of print for a while, and Matt was like, listen, man, distributors are contacting me, fans are contacting me, people want this album. And he said, I want to reissue it. And, of course, we were all for it. I mean,
we
had not really thought of that. To tell you the truth, I mean, I was kind of shocked that there was so much interest around it. So, I mean, we were like, wow, you know, and it's really great. So he did it. He put together a package, and it now the new Midnight Strikes comes with a video, like a live concert of us from 2004, which was not our best show. Make sure you drink a few beers if you watch that one. and, you know, there was our demo was on there, and I guess it was remastered or whatever. And so, yeah, it turned out great. I mean, there's all these new liner notes, new booklet and everything. But, it all looks really good. I mean, the first album was done, sorry, Matt, low budget. And, I mean, I guess this one was just done a lot better. And so we were happy with it. I mean, very happy. And it's good to have the album back out. And, man, it's amazing to us to see so many people interested in this music now. And
exactly.
It's great because, man, there's kids who are getting into traditional metal. I mean, of course, look, you know, we're not part of any trend or anything like that. If we cared about trends, we wouldn't have been in a traditional metal band
in
the early 2000s to start with. But at the same time, I like seeing kids getting into this music instead of something else because this music makes lifelong fans, man. I mean, ever since I got into metal, I've never looked back or looked away. That's been my life
exactly.
ever since I was a young kid. And so I feel like, hey, if that's happening again now with a lot of kids, look, of course, there's going to be trendy people who maybe jump on this, and maybe in a few years they'll be on to whatever the next trend is, like polka death metal or something. I don't know. But, I mean, you know, with us, I mean, I know that there'll be people who will get with this music and stay. And those are, to me, those are, because look, I mean, I'm at the age, I was just old enough to sort of catch the tail end of the 80s.
Right.
You know, and everybody's like, oh, the 80s. And of course, I love the 80s too. But let's be honest, I mean, there was a lot of trendy people in the 80s too. You know?
Oh, yeah.
It's
oh,
not
yeah.
like everybody then was a diehard metal warrior and they're all posers now.
I can tell you all about that, because I was into all the heavy stuff in the late 80s, and I would just go around and make fun of posers to their faces, and, you know, they were scared.
Nice.
You know, always like Bon Jovi fans and stuff, like, ugh.
Like the Exodus thing, it's like, kill a poser, you know, get that guy in spandex.
Exactly. So, trust me, you're exactly right. There was a lot of people that were just jumping on trends back then that are now, like,
yeah,
you know, short-haired
exactly.
businessmen or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and now I just feel that, again, I mean, if you'd have told me when we started the band there would be a resurgence in popularity of this, I'd have said you were crazy.
Right.
I mean, look, it was more of a shock to me than anybody. I mean, I mean, a couple of years ago, maybe a year or two ago, I went to the bookstore and picked up Terrorizer
right.
magazine, and they had this thing in there. It was like they were going through the best stuff of the decade,
right.
and they had a section on traditional metal, and I was like, this ought to be good, you know?
Right.
Like, what totally stupid thing I can put in there? And they had Widow in there, and I was like, I literally almost passed out. I couldn't believe it. I mean, it's not like anybody called me and told me or anything. And
right.
to see this whole thing sort of come full circle, and like you said, bands like us and Cauldron, who are great friends of ours, and, you know, for us to get some recognition, hey, man, it is cool, you know? It's very
yeah,
cool. And we're grateful. But with that being said, I mean, this is no trend thing to me. We'll be doing this no matter what is popular. I mean,
right.
we're going to keep doing it because we do it for fun, you know.
And I got that impression from you. I got that impression from you. That's why I was like, you were one of the first guys that I discovered in this scene, and you're still doing it. And I'm like, you know what? I got to get these guys on because you're the real deal.
Well, I
appreciate
know? It, man. Thank you. And you know, it's we are. I mean, me and Johnny, I mean, our drummer is pretty young. Me and Johnny, you know, we're a little older. I mean, you know, and we, like I say, we kind of caught the end of the 80s. And, you know,
right.
of course, we were into this stuff throughout the 90s. And I think even the 90s produced a lot of great metal bands. Maybe they were a little more under the radar, but I mean, and even up till now, I mean, I still think there's great bands. And yeah, when anything becomes popular, yeah, you're going to get a bunch of trendy bands or whatever who go, let's do a metal band like Judas Priest, yeah.
Right.
You know? But I mean, that's not what we do. I mean, we
exactly.
look. I love Priest, but we want to sound like ourselves. You know, I mean,
exactly.
we take influence from a lot of different things. Because the bottom line is this: there's already been a Priest, there's already been a Maiden. You're not gonna do Iron Maiden better than Iron Maiden.
Exactly.
It's just not gonna happen. So
I'm gonna get to
you
that.
Yeah, you
in
might
a bit.
As well
I'm
do
glad you said that.
Yeah.
But you know, I really discovered you through On Fire, so that's always been my favorite of your albums, at least till the new one came out. I really like the interplay between the male and female vocals. So what was the story with Lily, and why was she with you for such a short time?
Well, what happened with her, see, when we did Midnight Strike,
right.
we were trying to do, like, we were, I mean, of course, and we still are, but then we were just really into horror movies, like from the 70s and 80s especially. Again,
right.
that's something that we kind of grew up on, and
right.
we really, I like the B-movies, the cheesy ones, you know?
That's
and,
actually what the show's really about. I just brought music in because that's another one of my interests.
Yeah, I saw that, and that's cool. That's so cool. And by the way, I've got an interesting story, but I'll finish this. We were into the old school. I mean, it's stuff like The Exorcist, but plus also a lot of more obscure movies.
Right.
You know, we love the big ones, Omen, Exorcist, Phantasm, stuff like that.
Right.
But we were telling these stories, you know, these horror stories, but it was always kind of like from a male perspective. Like, you know, we had stories where, I mean, one of the songs... Night Child from the first album is about, like, this really super good-looking girl, and basically, like, a guy is walking home and ends up hooking up with her
right.
and getting her pregnant, and she, has been raised by wolves, and she takes her baby to the wolves.
Right.
I mean, it's cheesy stuff, yes, but I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
And we were kind of making our own movies. Well, anyways, but just in songs. And of course, there's a King Diamond influence there, obviously. But
right.
With On Fire, I guess we felt like we had told it from a male perspective. I mean, you know, on Midnight Strike. So with On Fire, we wanted to have like a female perspective in it. And that's where the idea came from, to get a girl. Well,
right.
We knew about Lily, and we said, hey, you know, I remember asking Johnny, I really didn't know her. I said, can this girl sing? He's like, yeah, I've heard her. She, you know, she's good.
Yeah.
And we contacted her. She actually thought we were like a Motley Crue cover band. I don't know where that came from, but anyways, she thought she was going to be singing Motley Crue songs. And we were like, no, you know, you're going to be... These are our songs. And
right.
So she comes into the band, and, you know, I kind of had the songs drawn up a little bit and what kind of her part would be, and it was basically just different perspective, you know, the same kind of stories and with a little bit different music. And once she sang, you know, it worked really great.
Right.
And we were really into it, but as time went on, I guess we just had a lot of relatively quickly some creative differences I think she just didn't... She just sort of had a different vision of the band that didn't really mesh with us, and it just kind of came to a head, you know?
Right,
and that's a hard thing to sort of work past. And we worked so hard on the band for so long, it was like it was kind of like all of us going in one way and her going another. So
right.
Kind of the obvious thing to do would be for her to go.
Exactly.
And, you know, but that album was kind of like a moment in time. I mean, and... I think it sort of was the beginning of Widow changing a little bit from album to album, even though, yeah, basically everything we've done sounds like us, in my opinion.
Right.
But also, it's not like we've done the same album four times in a row.
Not either. At all.
So we've kind of tried to just give you something a little bit off the beaten path. And we also, you know, we try to not do sort of what everybody else is doing. It's like we don't really pay attention to... these guys are doing this, so let's us do that. We just do whatever we do and hope you like it, you know?
Exactly, right. But you said, before I move on, you said you had something else to share. I guess it was about the movie.
Oh, no, we were talking about the horror stuff, and you being a big horror fan, I was just going to tell you, I went to a horror movie convention this past weekend.
Right.
In Charlotte. Oh, man, it was absolutely amazing. Angus Grimm was there, Paul Mann, yeah, Linda Blair, all these people, Ace Frehley, Marky Ramone.
Wow.
Yeah, it was freaking amazing, man. I met Angus Grimm. I love that guy. And Linda Blair, too. Oh, man. I mean, that was very, very fun. I had never been to a horror movie convention in my whole life, and
really?
I had such a blast. Yeah, never been.
Yeah, because I avoided
them. They don't come around here much.
I avoided them for years, and then I started going maybe, I don't know, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, and I love them.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I'm like, I want to go next year.
Getting back to the music, you know, still with, you know, the creative differences, you know, I totally understand that deal, but it's kind of hard to beat songs like American Werewolf in Raleigh, Preacher's Daughter, Dead End. You know, I play lead guitar myself, and, you know, when you hear the show play, check out the show closing theme in particular, you'll hear me playing, but... It's kind of hard to make a full-time living out of music unless you're really pandering to the masses, you know, American Idol stuff, the rapper crowd,
yes.
The juggalo types, you know, basically all the crap that passes for music these days. So I imagine you guys
right.
have to hold down day jobs as well.
Yeah, we do. But the good thing is, you know, I basically work with my family. We've all got flexible jobs to where we can take off for touring and stuff.
Mm.
So we pretty much set our whole life up to be able to do metal and tour,
right?
You know, because that's, we've known since we were kids, this is what we wanted to do.
Exactly.
And the thing is, you know, I've set my whole life up to be able to do this no matter what.
Right.
So, you know, and that's kind of, I mean, you have to pretty much be able to do that to play this type of music.
Exactly.
I mean, granted, some people get lucky and they're able to somehow get money, I guess, but I mean, with us, you know, it's been a lot harder, but yeah, we've sort of planned from the word go that we were going to do this no matter what. And, you know, so I'm glad. I mean, because if I had, like, basically like a normal job and all these responsibilities, there's no way I'd be able to tour. And
because that's what I was looking to, because, you know, in terms of dead end, you know, that's what happens. You need to get some crappy 9-to-5 job to pay the bills, and then you get married, then you need to get a place in a car, and before you know it, you're trapped. And you, like you said, you've joined the curse with a 9-to-5, and it's all over. You know, there's really got to be a better way.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we've been touring more and more, and now we're getting all kinds of opportunities for tours and stuff. So things are definitely on an upswing for us.
Great.
So I'm happy about that.
In the Third Eye Cinema with a special guest tonight, Chris Bennett of Widow. Coming up, we discuss Johnny Ani on Viper, the Raleigh scene, and being influenced by thrash and death metal. Only here on Third Eye Cinema. So beyond the whole Lily thing, you've gone through an inordinate amount of bass players and a few drummers as well. So why so much turnover?
Well, a big part of it was what we were just saying, the touring. The things we've done to build this band, I mean, we've driven for 18, 20 hours to play one show, to play one festival.
Wow.
I mean, we've done some hard, hard road work, stuff that people who even tour wouldn't do, you know? I mean, but to us, we didn't care. We wanted to take Widow to the people who are our fans, and it's a hard way to do it. I mean, it's very hard.
Exactly.
But our thing is total do-it-yourself, very punk rock, just, you know, we're going to go do it, and no matter what, and nothing's stopping us. And we've been doing that for years, and that's just hard for some people to do, because they eventually do get responsibilities like wives and kids and houses and things like that. And me and Johnny are basically like still kids, you might as well say. I mean, we've just chosen metal as our life, you know. That's, we're still doing it that way, so we don't have all that stuff, you know.
It's funny.
In other words, we're losers.
I would say that, but yeah.
You know, that's a nice way of saying we're losers.
It's a funny thing that you mentioned punk, because I was actually thinking it's like Black Flag, you know, get in the van, you know, that whole mentality.
Yes, I love Black Flag.
Especially, you know, the whole thing you're saying, like driving 20 hours just to get to one show and that's it.
I mean, we toured Canada a few years ago with Cauldron.
Right.
We drove 22 hours from North Carolina to Toronto for the first show of the tour. And that's the kind of stuff we do. I mean, I know we played the Rocklahoma Fest a few years ago, like with Saxon and with a bunch of other really killer bands.
Right.
We drove like 18 hours to get to that.
Oof.
I mean, we did a tour 2 years ago where some of the shows basically got screwed up. So me and Johnny tried to rebook some of the dates so we could keep playing.
Right.
We ended up with 3 18-hour drives back to back. Like, we drove 18 hours, played, drove 18 hours, drove all night. I mean, just 3 nights in a row. I mean, that's the kind of stuff we've done, and people think we're insane, but, I mean, to me, it's worth it because I love metal, and and all of us, you know, we're such fans of metal.
Right.
To hang out with other people and who love the same stuff, and, you know, that's what it's all about, man. It's just so much fun. There's nothing else I'd rather do. So
exactly.
I don't feel that it was a waste of money or a waste of time or whatever.
And
I feel like, hey, man, we made fans, you know.
And I was going to say, you know, back in the day, that's what bands like, you know, even bands are as huge now as Metallica, that's what they were doing. They were doing the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Some crappy old band, and they drove across, you know, 3 countries worth of Europe, 5 countries worth of Europe just to get to a show, and that was it, drove back. You know?
And that's right. And you have to, because now there's not the record company with the big money check where that can sort of launch you into anything. If you don't do it yourself, it's not going to get done. And another thing, a lot more bands are touring because people are starting to realize this, and it's making, like, a lot more, I guess, people out there touring. So I guess it's harder for younger bands to break through, I guess.
Right.
But the bottom line is this, again, like you said with the 80s, there was a lot of bands in the 80s. So it still boils down to this. If you have something that is original and that resonates with people and means something to people, I feel that you can still break through even in 2012. I mean, you can, if it hits people the right way,
right,
it'll probably take a lot more work than some bands who hit maybe 20 or 30 years ago.
Right.
But if your heart's in it and you work hard enough, I mean, I am a believer that anything's possible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know with us, things have gotten so much better over the last couple of years. Now to have more opportunities, I mean, I'm grateful because we worked so long to get it. I mean, me and Johnny have played together 15 years.
Right.
And, you know, it's not like we just sort of all of a sudden I was doing interviews and touring and
exactly
all that.
Exactly,
I mean,
right.
And I think when you do it like that, you're a lot more grateful. You appreciate your fans a whole lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to put on the best show and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you're willing to just do whatever as opposed to these, you know,
exactly,
people
right, fly by night.
Are
just, right. Now, getting back to this whole thing about the turnover, you know, one of the bassists you had in the band, Johnny Ayoun, was also the vocalist and rhythm guitar with Viper, who was another really good band on the Raleigh scene. And for the past 5 years, he's been with Twisted Tower Dire as vocalist. So how did that happen where you had him on Widow on bass?
Well, after our original bass player, Josh, left, Josh basically was in the band during the building process of the band, but he's married. He kind of wanted to just be at home, you know, watching TV or whatever. He didn't really want to be out grinding like we were.
Right.
And, you know, and I can understand that. But it was still hard on us when he left because he was in the band a long time.
Right.
Well, so then we got Johnny's brother, Michael, to play for a while. And I guess we didn't really – he had a different view of the way things were than we did, so then
right,
he was gone pretty quick. Well, Johnny was somebody who had been our friend. He had actually gone on tour with us just to sell merch and hang out and, you know, and all that when we had toured before. I mean, he had gone to us for a lot of Widow stuff.
Right.
And helped us out tremendously. And he had always said, you know, hey, just, you know – let me play bass or let me play guitar. I mean, he was always willing to sort of jump in and help out with stuff. And when it came that we needed a bass player, we said, hey, man, why don't you do this? And he was like, yeah. So he started doing it. Well, then he got married.
Right.
And suddenly he had a job after all these years of, like, touring and going all over the place with us, not being in the band. He gets in the band, and then he can't go because of his new job. So it was kind of a weird turn of events.
So was this all before Viper?
No. This was only in the last, like, 2 years.
Oh, okay.
So, and as a matter of fact, him being in the band was basically in 2011, pretty much.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, so, no, Viper had pretty much – see, our drummer was also in Viper, Peter.
Right.
And Viper kind of just – they went on, once Johnny got in CTD and Peter got with us, and once, I mean, the other two guys in Viper, Nick and Danny, basically kind of just got out of music. I mean, they still love metal and stuff, but I just, they're not really playing in bands or doing that whole thing anymore.
Right.
And so then it was just, those guys were already in bands that were out playing and releasing albums, so that was kind of just the end of Viper.
Right.
And so,
you know, I was going to say, it's actually a shame from my perspective that Johnny had wound up with Twisted Tower, because even though I understand they have a bigger fan base, it's a very different style. You know, they're more in the Iron Maiden mold. And Viper, if they were still around, they would have definitely been on my contact list for the show, because Strike of the Viper is one of the best retro-traditional metal albums out there to this day. So, you know,
yeah,
Johnny,
it's cool.
If you're listening to this and you want to bring back Viper as a side project, I'm all for it, and I'm waiting for you.
I mean, you know, they've talked about that, but then I don't know. I mean, it just, Peter has got a few other bands too that he does, and
right,
Johnny Ani's got his. You know, he's married now. Like I say, he's
right,
kind of settled down a bit. I mean, he would probably be mad at me for saying that, but
well,
I mean, he really has. Yeah, it does. It does. It happens, and he's been with the same girl for many, many years, and she's a wonderful girl. You know, so it's not like we were mad at him or anything. I mean, we understood.
You know,
but
I could never say a word against it, because, you know, I didn't think I was ever going to get married, and I've been married for 13 years, and I'm happy as a pig and shit. So.
Nice.
Absolutely,
totally, man. If your gut takes you in a certain direction, I mean, you just go. We've never tried to stop anybody. It's not like we've ever – I mean, I've heard of bands going, you know, you've got to choose us and make a decision. You know, all this
right,
kind of shit. We have never done that. I mean, we totally understand. I mean – people are not usually in their 30s still riding in a car for 20 hours and doing the things that me and Johnny do. I mean, normally people don't do that, you know.
Exactly.
And so, you know, and so, yeah, how could we not understand? But that's what we want to do, and we plan to keep doing it as long as we're alive, you know. I mean, we're going to just keep on going till we're old. I hope so anyways. And
that's it, yeah.
That's just the path. I mean, I kind of came to a crossroads in my life where you kind of go, should I have done this? And, you know, and I just knew this was all that I was meant to do. So
tell us a bit about the scene down there. I couldn't have been more surprised to find out that the old style of 80s traditional metal was being played in this day and age by new young bands, and that there's actually pockets where there's something of a thriving scene, like Toronto with Cauldron and Skullfist, and then Raleigh down here. So why South Carolina?
Well, Raleigh, or North Carolina, you mean?
North Carolina, sorry.
Did you say South? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I did.
North Carolina has had a good scene over the years. I mean, it would be really, really good and then kind of not so good for a while. And then, you know, it would just kind of go in waves. Well, around 2000 when we started, it was kind of down. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of interest in it. I mean, people were more into, like, extreme metal and stuff like
that.
Right. So people kind of laughed at us, I guess, in the beginning. But slowly but surely, the scene kind of, you could tell something was happening because more people started showing up to shows.
Right.
And then younger kids. And once I saw bands forming, younger bands, it was kind of like, okay, something's definitely happening here. And it was great to me to see all these bands emerge. And now it seems like there's already been what were considered the young bands then. They've gone. Then new young ones came in. Then they've already gone. And now there's a whole another sort of rise of younger bands again.
So is it the kind of thing where, you know, you get one band like you guys or Cauldron up in Toronto, and then other bands just see this and it starts building a scene that way, or is it?
Well, yeah, pretty much. I mean, usually the local people, like I know when I was a teen, I would go to Raleigh, and there was a death metal band there called Eldritch Horror.
Right.
Those guys were only a couple of years older than me, but I looked at them like Metallica, you know, I mean, or Maiden or something. I mean, they were like, it was like they were just huge in my opinion, and I was so, and they had not even done an album, and but they were such a big deal to me, and that's so inspiring when you can have that sort of really hands-on experience a lot. So
right.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much how it does come about, and I know a lot of those people have credited us for saying, oh yeah, we saw you guys, and you kind of led me to, I think maybe seeing us, the band that's been around as long as we have, a lot of the young guys have said, oh, well, they'll even see our T-shirts or whatever and sort of check out those bands, and that introduces them to the scene as a whole.
Right.
So I think locally it takes bands like that to introduce kids to metal in general. Like, well, you take Metallica, for example. You know, I mean, they would walk around wearing Misfits T-shirts. I mean, how many people have Metallica turned on to the Misfits?
It's true.
Who are amazing. And stuff, you know, just stuff like that. I think that's really cool how that works. And the same, like in the death metal scene, you'd always see bands like Cannibal Corpse.
Shirts.
Yeah, wearing a shirt of a band that's maybe not as big as them, and then but it's on their album cover, and you see that and go, oh, you know, I need to check this out.
Right.
So that's very cool. I mean, and that's kind of what we've always tried to do. We don't wear like a freaking costume or something.
And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned death metal, because I was going to say, you know, it's almost like the death metal thing in the early 90s where most of the good bands centered around Florida. But, you know, that was because of Scott Burns and Morris Sound Studios.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, what was it about Raleigh that encourages this scene? But I guess it was just, you know, kind of grew up organically around, you know, you guys and then bands that came up after you.
Yeah, well, the thing with Raleigh has always produced some great bands. Well, I know, like, well, CFC from Raleigh, Confessor from Raleigh, and those guys, you'll still see those guys around, and it's funny to me, like, someone from, you know, some other state or whatever, the people that are even friends with us have come down here, and they go to a show, and you see these people just hanging out at the bar, and it's like, oh, man, there's Kerry from Confessor, or Carl, you know, who was in COC, and I mean, it's very cool, because I sort of take that for granted, I guess. And then when you see people come to Raleigh and be so excited, it's like, that's cool, you know?
Yeah, and I was kind of hearing the same thing, because I was talking to Jackie Slaughter from Skullfist, and he was saying, oh, yeah, you know, up in Toronto, you know, you go to a show, and there's, you know, the guys from Cauldron are there, and the guys from Skullfist are there, and there's guys from these other bands, and they all just, like you said, hang around the bar, they're watching the show, they catch a couple drinks, you know, hang out together. So, you know, it's nice that there's that kind of scene going on again.
You know, there is. And it's like you said, it is a lot like the death metal scene. Because I know that was shocking to me when I first started, and I'm a huge fan of thrash and death metal and, you know, extreme metal, black metal, whatever.
Yeah, me too.
And to me, I know it was very shocking in my teen years because I'd been to some arena shows, you know, like to see Metallica and Slayer and stuff like that. But when I started really going to club shows, I was going to see death metal gigs and thrash stuff.
Right.
It was really a shock to me to see bands, you know, like I saw like Carcass on the Necroticism tour, and you walk in and there's Bill Steer just standing there, and you're like, wow, you know, I was like 17 at the time, and you know, it was really shocking to me, and I just walked right up, and then here I'm chatting with Bill Steer, a person that I had looked at as like a rock star, you know.
Exactly, and I've seen that so many times.
It was very crazy.
They just come down, okay, they did their set, or they didn't do their set yet, they got the opening act or whatever, and they just wander around the floor hanging out, talking to fans, you know. It's,
absolutely, and that really influenced me, and that's Widow. We don't ever, we consider ourselves a band of the people. We don't ever want to be like, not like that, because
right.
that had such a big impact on me, and we're very influenced by death metal in that way, and that, you know, man, we walk on stage and play wearing the same clothes that we had on that day. We don't put on some big outfit or something, or,
right.
I mean, we're just who we are. We're just ourselves, and that's it.
Exactly.
And, you know, and to me, that's, I guess, where bands like Metallica plus, you know, a lot of the more extreme bands had a big influence on us in that way. And punk,
right.
too. I mean, I love the Ramones
exactly.
and the Misfits and Black Flag, and that's kind of
yeah.
how they were. And that inspired us so much that that's what we want to be. And we see a lot of people who are not like that. And
yeah.
it's just stupid to me. And I like that a lot. And when people are just cool and, you know, they're just...
Exactly, right.
Just hang out. I mean, you
they're
know...
approachable,
that,
right.
Exactly. That's how we will always be with this
right.
band.
And, you
so,
know, that's,
I mean,
for me anyway, that's what really makes you a fan as opposed to being just like, well, okay, I like these guys' music, but they're a bunch of assholes, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That makes fans for life.
Right.
I think you need that in the scene, and I think that's very influential on kids. You know, just like you were saying, like in Toronto, if you like Skull Fist and you like Cauldron and you go to a show and there's those dudes right there, you're kind of like, wow,
exactly.
you know? And whereas, you know, if you go see AC/DC, unless you buy like a VIP pass, you're not going to just see them hanging out.
Exactly.
And I can understand that in the sense that a band like that is big enough, they would never be able to leave. There'd be 10,000 people wanting to talk to them. So.
Right.
I mean, I do understand that, but at the same time, when you're a teenager, it really impacts you so much. I was so impacted by thrash and death metal because I just could not believe. I'm like, I can't believe there's, you know, there's Barney from Napalm Death. And he's like,
right.
hey, man, you know, just kind of like, well, hey, mates, or whatever, you know. I mean,
right.
it's kind of just, it was shocking to me. I mean, I know, like, Terrorizer, I love the band Terrorizer.
Right.
And I was a teenager and I walk into this Napalm Death gig and there's Jesse Pintado. I'm like, hey, and I'm talking about Terrorizer and I'm just, like, totally freaked out. It's like, that was just mind-blowing for me. But, I mean, I didn't even thought at that age then, I thought if I can ever have a band, you know, I want to be just like these people.
Right, right,
so.
Exactly. So how many bands do you have down there? Because, you know, you got Widow, you got Viper, you got Twisted Tower, you got...
There is a lot. There's us and Twisted Tower Dire are kind of more
the old guard.
I guess, yeah, the dinosaurs, maybe. I don't know. Maybe we're not dinosaurs yet, but... You know, we've been around for a while, and TTD was kind of transplanted from Virginia, and a couple of their guys have actually moved back to Virginia, but I still kind of consider TTD almost the NC band now. They've been living here for a while. You've got a lot of bands. There's a band called Blatant Disarray who released an album. They've been around forever. They released one album, and there's some newer bands that are kind of up-and-coming young bands like Nightmare and a band called No Mercy, and who else? Peter's got a few bands. I can hardly even keep up with all the bands Peter's in. He's got a new progressive band called Atma Weapon. You know, there's and there's a band I really love. Now, they're not from Raleigh. They're from Wilmington, but they're called Salvation.
Okay.
Those dudes are totally amazing, and they're very, very cool and probably one of my favorite bands from the area.
I was just curious how big the scene really is. You know, it's like, is it really just, you know, like Jackie was saying, well, you know, we got maybe 50 guys total, but every one of them's in a band, so it makes it seem bigger than it is. So I don't know how it is down in Raleigh.
Yeah, yeah. Raleigh, you could draw 150, 200 people to a show.
Okay.
So there are just fans. I mean, there's a lot of people in bands, but we've got guys like, well, a really influential person is a friend of ours, Tony Leonard, who his nickname is Dio.
Right.
So we call him Dio, and sometimes that confuses people, you know, because they're like, Dio? And,
yeah, they're looking around, but where is he?
We've known him as Dio forever, and he is responsible for promoting a lot of stuff and putting on events, putting on Metal Fest, and I truly feel that that guy is, and he's not in a band, which is, by today's standards, unusual.
Right.
But he's been around forever. He's like a total encyclopedia of metal knowledge. I mean, me and him talk and like geek out over stuff.
Right.
And, you know, he's, guys like him sort of just keep putting this out there for a whole new section of kids. I know we just had a Metal Fest that he put together. And, I mean, there was, you know, there was 600-700 people at this thing.
Right.
And not all just bands, a lot of fans and a lot of young kids.
Right.
And to me, you know, that starts the whole process all over again.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, I don't know if it's because I'm getting older, but you realize you're influencing another generation. And that's where it's, you know, it doesn't really matter if you're talking to people your own age so much. Is, you know, you got to get the younger ones into it, and then you're building something, you know?
Absolutely. And that's the way I look at it. I mean, I want, somebody's got to, I mean, gosh knows, just about everybody I'm a fan of is like a senior citizen. You know, it's like I was saying this the other day. It's like, my favorite thing to do is go and watch senior citizens play music. It's like every band I like is like 70 years old. I mean, somebody's got to keep this thing going.
Exactly.
And a lot of, I guess by the rest of the world, other than Raleigh, they still consider, you know, they think a widow is like new. So I consider bands like us, TTD Cauldron, Icarus Witch.
Yeah,
as,
all you guys have been
keeping,
around for at least 10 years, so you're like, yeah, the old
but,
guard.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm hoping that, you know, our bands sort of keep this thing going on and on for many years, and then sort of there's a whole generation coming up behind that that just
exactly.
carry metal on into the future. And, I mean, you know, it's, when you look at bands like Priest, I mean, you know, they were around and going for a long time before they really started.
And the Scorpions, too. I mean, they didn't really kick in until, what, 81 or something? They were around since 72.
Yep. Yep, exactly. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. So that's the thing. You've got to put a lot of work in, and you've got to be in it for the long haul. That's for sure. I think a lot of younger bands, at least I've seen this in Raleigh, they get frustrated when things just don't happen right away. I mean,
right.
they sort of think that because a bunch of their friends go to a gig, they are, you know, going to have this immediate overnight success. And
right.
then it doesn't happen, and eventually your friends don't want to just keep coming. And you pretty much, we decided from day one with Widow, we were going to make fans and just make them one at a time if we had to.
Right.
And not have some fake sort of like call all the people we know so we can shoot a video and make it look like we have a huge crowd.
Exactly.
That's never what we've done. And we had to really swallow our pride and play small shows for a long time. But eventually, if you are willing to put that kind of work into it, that's how you can build something. And yeah, you got to be in it for the long haul, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Be listening to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Chris Bennett of Widow. Coming up, we discuss intuitive playing, eschewing theory and formal training, finding your own voice, how simpler can be better, the value of melody and death metal, and how silly the black metal is. One thing that makes you guys really stand out to me is that, like Cauldron, again, you really don't go the tribute band route. It's not like you said, I want to be Iron Maiden or what have you. You know, you've mentioned a Merciful Fate influence, and I definitely noticed that in the guitar lines and some of the harmonies, but it's not copycatting by any means. I mean, you don't have that same European stodginess. And, you know, I love Fate. I'm just saying that, you know, there's something peculiar American about your sound. You know, it's lively and bouncy, for lack of a better phraseology. You know, it actually moves, it's catchy and melodic, yet it's aggressive at the same time. You know, I'm hearing things like early Lizzie Borden in there. And with On Fire, you even dragged a bit of the emo sound in there with the screaming behind the male and female vocal parts. I think you had a bit of that on Midnight Strikes as well. It's really a hybrid, and, it makes you quite unique.
Thank you. No, that was the plan, yeah. And I'm glad, that's nice to hear you say that, because, you know, that means people understand. And, yeah, that's, I mean, we've always felt that you're never going to be really much of anything if you're not unique to start with. I mean,
exactly.
I understand it takes a few years to sort of develop your sound, but I mean, we've got like a wide range of influences.
Right.
And part of that is mixing together. And plus, you know, when I write songs, I mean, I'm just playing. I just sort of take the guitar and play. I'm not like a trained musician.
Right.
And that was on purpose. I mean, I started playing by ear.
Right.
And then a few years in, I was going to go the route of learning music and music theory and all this. And I realized,
right,
man, this is just not for me.
Right.
I saw it as almost being a limitation.
Yes.
As far as the way I felt like I just wanted to play what came out of me and
right,
that I was going to have my sound. And that's kind of what I did. I really don't know a lot about music. I mean,
I am
people,
so glad
I said that to people and they go, yeah, people go, yeah, right. You know, it's like, I really don't. I mean, I just play whatever I play. I know what sounds good to me.
I am so glad you said that, because I am the exact same way. You know, I learned to play by ear, and then I decided, you know, I was learning stuff, and my first guitar teacher tells me, oh, you know too much theory for me, because the guy was a blues player. And he's like, you better go find a jazz teacher. So I did, and I started, you know, going to a jazz teacher. And then I was realizing that, you know what, this isn't really where I want to go. I mean, it's nice that I can learn some of this crap, but it's not giving me what I need. You know, okay, I learned some new chords, and that's great, but I'm really looking for something else. And that's what I ended up doing. I almost like deliberately forgot everything I knew. And now, you know, here I am playing what I'm playing. And it's people that listen to this stuff when I do play and somebody hears me, like on the radio show, they're like, no, it's impossible. You know, you must have been playing forever. And yes, I have, but not, you know, if you ask me to play somebody else's songs, chances are, I don't know.
Exactly.
I can sit in with you. You know, you play a song, and I'll play on top of you, and no problem. We'll be fine. But it's always on the fly. You know, it's not like, okay, let's go play, you know, the Money by the Beatles, or let's play, you know, Run to the Hills by Iron Maiden. I don't know. You know, just start playing a damn
thing.
Yeah,
oh, absolutely, man. I know. And I've learned some songs, covers and whatnot, over the years by either, like, just sitting down and figuring it out myself. Just
right.
Messing around till I get it, or by reading tab or whatever. But
exactly right.
I mean, to me, I try to sort of take an influence from bands. Like I like a lot of 70s stuff. I love Rainbow, Thin Lizzy,
right.
Skinner. I'm a big
right.
Skinner fan. You know, who obviously we don't sound like Skinner at all, but I've taken influence from, say, a Lynyrd Skynyrd thing that I really love, and I sort of grab my guitar and try to play something that I feel. If I'm inspired by that part, I'll try to play something.
Exactly.
And since I don't really know how to play like Skynyrd, my thing just ends up sounding like me. And
right.
then there, boom, there's a Widow idea.
And that's the bottom line. I mean, even people like Carlos Santana, you know, was one of the reasons I picked up the guitar in the first place. He always says, okay, well, you can start off playing, you know, B.B. King tunes or something for the first half an hour, but eventually you're going to start finding out what you want to say, and your style is going to come out, and that's where you got it. That's what's important.
That's right.
Because you don't want to sound like B.B. King.
I agree.
You
want to
sound like you. So.
No, man, no. I mean, I know there was a time for me that, you know, I was really into Yngwie and all the
right.
shredders and
me
stuff,
too.
And I still
me
like
too.
That stuff. But I sat down with Yngwie's instructional video, and I was like, I'm going to learn this, and I'm going to, like, be the new shredder, and I'm going to out-shred
right.
everybody. And I realized very quickly that that's not going to happen.
Right.
I was like, you know, I think I came away with one or two things from that
yep.
Yngwie video, and it's like, people are like, you learned one thing off of that? Wow, you know? And
I did the same thing. It was with Yngwie, Vinnie Moore, I don't know if you know him, and
Paul
Gilbert.
I know Vinnie Moore.
Yeah. Right?
I've got Paul Gilbert's video, too. Paul
yeah.
Gilbert's video was more helpful to me than any of them.
Well, true, because he's going into more of, I don't know, it's more of like a feeling type thing as opposed to a specific, you know, he'll show you some exercises, but it's not like, this is how you do this crazy, you know, like Yngwie with his, okay, I'm going to show you how to do a harmonic major, you know, and whoa, hold on a second.
Oh, yeah, and Yngwie can't play anything slow either. He's like, this is that slow, and he's like, yeah.
And all those crazy, like, sweep arpeggios, and like, okay, I can do some of that, but, you know, some of them are like, whoa, not like six of them in a row and all over the neck. So.
Oh, man, I know. The man's insane, I'm telling you.
So I found out the same thing. I was like, you know, I used to be, when I was younger, I was playing more, you know, trying to be a shredder and never quite making it. And nowadays, I just cold it back, and I'm playing more of my own style. And so some of it comes off, you know, bluesy and pentatonic and whatever, and some of it comes off shred, and some of it comes off with sweep arpeggios, and some of it comes off, you know, it's like a weird balance that's kind of, again, kind of unique. You
but
know,
there's
you
no rule that says you can't do that.
Exactly.
I mean, we tried, I know with Life's Blood, we tried to, or, you know, I really tried to focus more on just the song.
Right.
Let me write the best song that I can write.
Right.
And the best vocal line. And I stopped doing demos of stuff. I stopped writing stuff down.
Right.
I felt like if I can't remember it, just remember it. It's
right.
not good enough. And that's
exactly.
kind of the, and that again was a Skynyrd influence because I was reading this book on Skynyrd and it said that Ronnie Van Zant never wrote down any lyrics. He felt like if he couldn't remember it, it wasn't good enough. And I thought, wow, that really was inspiring to me because
yeah.
I felt like, you know, that's what can make a catchy song. And that's kind of the direction I've gone in. So.
You know, I always found like with Hendrix, it wasn't the fancy parts that really got my attention. It was when he got a vamp going and then he really just let loose. So, you know, now
yep.
what do? I play a lot of vamps. So, like, when you hear the end theme for the music, you'll listen to it, and you'll hear some fancy parts in the background, and, you know, you hear, okay, I got some funky chords and whatever else. But most of it, when I had, because the way I did it, with, you know, I put a bunch of solos, and I just picked the best ones and mixed and matched and did what I had to do. And when I actually had a section when I was, like, going off and trying to shred, it never really worked. Not that the playing wasn't good, but it didn't work with the song. So I ended up cutting most of that crap out and ended up doing more of the simpler stuff. And that's what
works. Hey, and you know what works. You know what sounds good to you.
Exactly.
I mean, the listener is usually – I mean, I guess there are some people who are really geeked out about the technicality of stuff.
Right.
For the most part, the listener just goes, does this sound good or
right.
does it not?
Exactly.
I mean, that's why, you know, there are people who tell you Angus Young's the best guitarist that ever lived.
Right. And
Angus wouldn't tell you that.
First one. He is the first one to say, oh, I can play all those damn scales too, but I ain't going to play them on stage. That's just doodling, you know. It's masturbating on the guitar. And
man.
And he goes out there.
But AC/DC rocks, man.
Oh, they do. He's great. I love them. But
I do too. And same with Kiss, you know.
And it's funny because, again, I was playing out with this one. I actually spent a couple of years sitting in with different bands, and this happened to be like a Latin band, right? And the guys had heard me play before, so he said, oh, come on down and sit in, whatever. So the other guy that was there, we had another guitarist, and he knew my style. So he was there busy playing, you know, trying to do all this fast stuff and scales and whatever. And I just dialed it way back, and I was doing these simple pentatonic blues licks like Carlos Santana. And the people that were sitting there watching all ran up to me. And it wasn't because he was a bad player. It was just, you know, that's what resonates sometimes with people, depending on what the music is. You know, you don't
Absolutely.
Have to be, you know, you don't have to be going for like, okay, I'm going to be Chris and Paul Terry. Chris and Paul Terry is great. But, you know, it's what works, you know. You got to be like Bruce
Absolutely.
Lee. You take what works, and that's what's going to take the guy down. You know, you're not worried about sticking to form.
Yeah, man, it's true. You go with what works. And I think we're sinking more into our sort of, we're getting our groove now.
Right.
I mean, we know sort of what we can play. We learned over the years because there were times when we wrote songs, like even some of the songs on Midnight Strikes, it was almost like we almost played beyond our ability.
Yeah, that's what
and
I was saying.
And then we would go up there.
It was, like, too complicated, and the harmonies were, like, getting dissonant. And you could sense, like, you were trying to do a song as opposed to it just came naturally. Which
right.
is, you know,
we would
like
go up there and have to play the song live, and it's like, ah, you know, we could hardly do it. And playing these songs now is like, it's like we're on vacation or something. I mean, it's just like, oh, this is great. I can have fun. Wow, what do you know? I mean, and I've got nothing against technical stuff. I mean, I'm not knocking that. I'm amazed by the people who can do it, and I like
right.
a lot of technical bands. I mean, but to me, I just
that's not what we do. Exactly.
And I mean, you know, I like some technical stuff, but I also love Motorhead
and
stuff like that.
Oh God, I'm such a huge Motorhead fan.
Oh, me too, man. And we played in L.A. with Saxon a few months back. Oh man, and that was I'm a huge Saxon fan. That
yep.
show was absolutely amazing. But anyways, we walked over to the Rainbow and there was Lemmy.
Awesome.
And I'm like, Lemmy's here. I mean, I kind of freaked out for a minute, and we just basically approached him and talked to him and hung out and, you know, had a beer, and it was very, very, very nice. And wow, that was a big deal to me because, yeah, I love Motorhead. That man is just, I mean, he's an icon. He's unbelievable. And because I had watched the Lemmy movie, and
right.
then they talked about him being in the Rainbow and the whole thing in the movie, and I thought, And I told Johnny, I said, you know, wouldn't it be funny if he was at Rainbow and we were there? And we were kind of like, oh, he won't be. I'm sure he'll be on tour or whatever. And Johnny, like, sends me a text. He's like, I'm sitting beside Lemmy. I was like, oh, my God, and I went over to the Rainbow. I mean, it was funny.
You know, tell me how you got this unique sound. Well, I'm talking about how you got this unique sound, getting back to that. It's like,
oh, yeah.
That's the main reason that you and Cauldron have always been my favorites in the bands that I tell everyone about. Because, you know, I'm adding Skullfist to that list now as well, but they're brand new, relatively speaking. You know, they've only been around for like a year. So how did you develop your sound? Because I understand the original incarnation of Widow actually developed out of a death metal band you were all in.
Yes, yes. Well, when we started playing originally, like our demo,
right?
What we wanted to do was have a – I mean, you know, and let me just say this first. What's really funny, you want to talk about trends.
Right.
When we started, power metal was really just sort of getting really big in the States.
Right.
So everybody was calling us a power metal band.
Right.
And we're like, you know, we're not really power metal.
No, not at all.
And we were influenced by stuff like Metallica and Maiden and Priest, King Diamond, and also bands like Crimson Glory.
Right.
And Leather Wolf and stuff like this. And, you know, we just wanted to play and have our own style. We wanted to set ourselves apart, take that influence, but do something else with it. I mean, kind of like if you look at Maiden, they were so influenced by Thin Lizzy and UFO.
Right.
And there's parts where you hear and go, that really sounds like UFO or whatever. But
yeah, because I mean, when you said Leather Wolf, I'm like, oh, I heard that in your music, and I didn't even pick it up.
yeah.
But
I love Leather Wolf. And,
now that you
say
that.
Yeah, and we sort of tried to take that and twist it. And with us coming from a death metal and an extreme background as well, that's where some of the screams and stuff came from that we did, you know, because I love guys like Millie from Creator and Corthon and Tom G. Warrior and, you know, all these guys like that.
You're naming all my favorites.
Venom, Kronos, I love Kronos. Venom's huge influence and all that. So, we felt like, hey, man, it would be different to sort of mix all this up. And then with the idea of putting in the female singing, well, that was even more. But I almost think we took it so far. But I guess now that's what's led to Life's Blood being just Johnny singing. Because it wasn't a conscious effort with Life's Blood that we go, well, I'm not going to scream on this album.
Right.
We've just always, the thing with me is like, I kind of just go with my heart and I don't, it's not that I don't put a lot of thought in the band because I do planning stuff. But if I sort of am going in a direction, I just go with it. I don't fight it.
Exactly.
And I guess it just didn't happen naturally and organically, and I felt no need to sort of force, like, well, I've got the scream, so I'm going to have to put it in there somewhere. You know,
right.
To me, there's no rule book. You just do whatever.
And exactly.
I know with this album, one thing with us, I mean, the lyrics are a little different.
Yes.
The lyrics are more about personal experiences from me and just my own thoughts and things like that, which I've never been able to express in the band.
Right.
And I really wanted to, so I did it, and I was a little nervous about it because I thought, man, this is a whole different thing. I wonder if the people who like us will like this. But, again, you can't think about that. You got to just go if you're going to progress the band forward. So I did that, and it just sort of naturally came out. And another thing was, you know, we would have a song that maybe wasn't really necessarily a happy song. And after the Nightlife album, we had kind of gotten known, I guess, as a party band to a lot of people. And because we were singing about partying and all this stuff.
Right,
and we still sing about that, but then we'd have a song that would kind of, on the new album, that would kind of be about that. Then there'd be another one that was kind of just a happy, upbeat song, and then there'd be another one that was kind of depressing.
Right.
So, but I thought, hey, again, there's no rule book. You can do this. Why not? I mean,
exactly.
I mean, no one feels the same every minute of the day. You're not the party guy every minute or the sad, kill yourself guy. I mean, maybe some people are, but everybody goes through a range of emotions. So I thought, hey, this is an album. Let's go through a range of emotions. And the funny thing is, that's been sort of against the rules for so long because, you know, you've got doom bands who are there sad all the time. They wouldn't dare write a happy, fun song.
Right.
And then you got party bands who they wouldn't dream of writing something depressing. So, I mean, there's all these rules. And I guess to me, is I don't like the rules.
Exactly.
I just want to do whatever. I don't care about the rules. I just,
right.
I mean, if we're not doing this thinking we're going to make millions of dollars or anything. I mean, we're doing this for fun because we love it. I mean, so therefore, we're going to do whatever we want to do. I mean, it's just that simple. And I'm so pleased with the album. It's really nice to hear so many people embrace the album and say, oh, it's Widow's best album. And
yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm going to be talking about that in a minute. But
oh, thank you. And but people are discovering it. People are discovering us for the first time because of this album.
Right.
And, yeah, I'm happy about that. And it seems like we've also converted maybe some people who maybe didn't really care about us that much before.
Right.
So,
now, the fact
great,
that you came out of a death metal band, you know, that's actually something people don't understand, that the early death metal bands were, in fact, based in melody and harmony. I mean, yeah, they broke some of the established rules, but it hadn't devolved into this whole technical math metal and brutal scene.
No,
yet.
You're right about that. Okay, take the band Death, who I love.
Right.
You, and now, an album that really got me hardcore into death metal was Leprosy by Death.
Right, right.
But if you really break that album down, that is a verse, chorus, catchy song. Yeah, he's growling, and yeah, the music is heavy and extreme and fast, but these were verse-chorus songs, man. I mean, it was...
Yep.
I mean,
and then you got those James
not...
Murphy solos.
And exactly. James
Which,
Murphy,
again,
then he comes along in the band, and he's amazing, and he was kind of like the Yngwie of death metal, and...
Yeah,
I mean,
he also put a lot of melody in his solos, too, which, again...
No, he did. He put a lot of melody into it. I mean, man, I love Cause of Death. His work on that is amazing. And Spiritual Healing, too. He's great on that. But, I mean, these were well-written songs. Morbid Angel was the same way.
Yep.
Catchy songs and songs that stuck with you. And to me, that's something death metal has lost.
It totally
and,
lost.
I mean, at the end of the day, man, a catchy song... A song that people can relate to, a song that people can sing. People want to have fun at a show. I don't care if you're like the evilest, like cut yourself black metal person or whatever. You want to go, you might have fun being pissed off, and that's how you have fun. But it all boils down to this. You want to have fun at a show, and when bands write these songs that you just can't even follow, that's not gonna stick with people.
And
you
right,
look at the people that are legends, that are still, people are still talking about, they had good songs.
Yeah. And, you know, I was talking to Beelzebub, who's, you know, he's a big death metal underground guy, as well as...
Oh, Beelzebub, yeah, he was at the convention Saturday. I saw him.
I was going to ask you, because I knew he was down there, but I wasn't sure if he went to that show, because he's touring one of his movies. Yep.
Yeah.
I
that guy's
almost
crazy.
Asked you. Oh, he's great. I love that guy. He actually
he's
actually up here by May, so... But... You know, I was talking with him a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that, you know, this whole thing that happened with the black metal scene, where these guys are going around saying, oh, we can't smile and we can't have fun, that's total crap, because, you know, it doesn't matter. Like you said, they think they're scary and evil or whatever the hell. They're still people, you know, they're still drinking and having fun and joking around. And, you know, you know, it's ridiculous that they come up with this stuff. You know, they make these fake rules, and it becomes a pose. And it's the same thing that happened with death metal, where they went into this whole technical math metal thing and the brutal thing. And, you know, you can't really listen to this stuff and enjoy it anymore. It's just like a bunch of fast noise. And I think that's
absolutely,
why, for all intents and purposes, I mean, yeah, it's still going. There's still bands out there. But that's why the scene really died off so fast, because, you know, death metal was a big deal from, like, you know, 1989 or 90 or so through, like, 92 or 93. And then after that, there's not too much value that came out, you know? Black metal took
over.
And
the thing is, it's funny to me. No, you're absolutely right. I totally agree with you. And, like, black metal, here's what makes me laugh the most about black metal. All these rules that they set up. You've got some kid in the Midwest who's like, you know, I want to be like Mayhem. They are evil, and I'm going to hate everybody, and they're following all these rules.
Right.
Meanwhile, like, Hellhammer is, like, wearing an all-white outfit and going to a techno club trying to get girls. I mean, he is a person, like you said. I mean, he doesn't follow that, and these people are like, I know if Hellhammer was here, he'd be, like, hating everything with me. It's like, no, he probably would be at a dance club, you know?
Exactly. And look what, you know, everybody looked up to Tom G. Warrior and Celtic Frost and Hellhammer and all that, and look what happened to them. They started doing pop music, which was a mistake. But, you know, you even listen to stuff like... Gold Lake.
Third album.
Yeah, right. But you even listen to, like, Into the Pandemonium, and he's sitting there laughing away and making goofy, like, Dean Martin songs. And, you know, it's like a big joke. So how can you go around and say, like, ooh, this is serious, these people. You know, and Venom is another one. You know, Cronus is the first one to tell you. It's like, get the hell out of here. You know, just have a drink and relax with your mates. As opposed to, you know, I'm going to go burn down a church. And I'm so, you know, come on, get off.
Yeah, man, I think there was a lot of teen angst in those guys from Norway.
Right.
But I was really big in the underground and tape trading and stuff back then. And I traded with some people in Norway who, you know, all that black metal shit with the churches burning and everything was happening then. And this guy was telling me about it at the time it was happening. And, I mean, again, this is before the internet, obviously. And
right.
I mean, we had our own internet with the underground, which is really funny
exactly.
to think about. But
I remember
but,
when
I was
trading them.
Oh, yeah, man, it was great. I mean, I made friends all over the world as a teenager doing that, and it was so cool. I miss that. I really do. But,
yeah.
But you know, he was telling me about a lot of the people in Norway and stuff and what was going on. And, yeah, I mean, I appreciate the spirit and the music. I mean, I like – the things I like about, like, the Norwegian thing is I do dig how they put their heritage into it.
Right.
I do think it's stupid when – someone from Myrtle Beach where it's like hot all the time is like, I'm a true pagan Viking black metal. I mean, no, you're not. And, yeah. It's, you might be a surfing metaler, but not a, you know, satanic one. I mean, it just, to me, and I got to say in a way that sort of influenced us with Widow even is, man, we're proud of who we are. I'm not from the cold pagan vast land. I mean,
exactly.
I'm from North Carolina where it's hot.
Right.
And, you know, you're not going to make me put on some freaking outfit and pretend like I'm a Viking because I'm not, man. I'm a dude who wears shorts for most of the year because it's hot here. And,
it's hot. People are friendly. You know, it's not.
It's just how it is. I want to make the guy from Norway want to do some North Carolina metal, man. We are true North Carolina metal.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, that's funny to me. But, I mean, hey, it's cool, I guess, that those guys had that big of an impact on people. But, I mean, a lot of it was a teen angst kind of thing. I mean, everybody felt angry like that at some point or another. And,
I like a lot of that stuff, at least the early stuff, you know, the first couple of Mayhem things, the Immortal, I mean, you know, even Borzum, you know, that stuff was good, but...
Oh, yeah, me too, man. You could tell there was heart in it. I mean, you could tell they were really into what they were doing, in the same way with a lot of the early death metal stuff. I mean, it was the exact same way. You listen to Autopsy, I mean, you can tell that Chris Reifert's really into that shit, and I think people can spot honesty. I mean, you know when something is honest and when it isn't, and I feel that comes out in our music. I feel that people know that we're really into this shit, you know, like you were saying earlier.
And it's true, because, you know, the early bands and all these scenes, that you know that they really, you know, I don't know if they believed it or if they just felt it or if they just had, you know, a fire under their ass. But you always get to a point, like with Death Metal, I say it was like 92, 93, where that was it. You know, you really didn't find nothing good after that. And then black metal was like, okay, it was from like 92 to about 96. And then after that, most of it's crap, you know. So ever since, it's like, you know, we've just been kind of picking up the pieces and like, okay, well, what's going to come next? And hopefully it's, you know, you guys and the guys up in Toronto with the retro scene, because I haven't seen too much on these shores, you know.
So, well, I think that this is still something that's growing.
Yes.
And we've actually got a tour that's coming up. I don't know if you know about this yet or not, with Cauldron.
Oh, great.
Yeah, the tour in the States starts in July. It's going to be Widow, Icarus Witch, Cauldron, and Paul De'Anno.
Paul De'Anno, awesome.
I can say that now. Like,
awesome.
That's been a secret, but they finally announced it. And it's going everywhere in North America.
Wow.
So it's our first, like, major tour for a long time, so I'm very happy.
I know it's not popular to say, but De'Anno is the only Maiden vocalist for me.
Oh, man, the first two Maidens are just unbelievable. And we played with Paul De'Anno before, but to have this opportunity to be on this tour was a very big deal for us, and we're very excited. And I feel that this is kind of our opportunity to really spread the traditional metal thing with three of the bands who've been doing it for a long time to sort of everybody in North America.
Right.
You know, I mean, because we've played we've played in Europe, you know, and of course it's amazing there. And it's really good in Canada, too. And I think in the States, things are really on an upswing. And I just, I really feel that this tour is a real good sort of, because there hasn't really been a tour that was a big tour that sort of showcased, like, the newer bands of traditional metal like this.
Right.
And, I mean, even though we've been around for a while, like I was saying, people still sort of consider us all new.
Right.
And, you know, there hasn't really been, I mean, yeah, Cauldron has done some touring in the States, and so have we, and so has Icarus Witch. But to put together this package is really cool. But not only that, to have Paul Di'Anno, who would maybe draw out some fans.
Exactly.
Who maybe don't necessarily go to every show and would get a chance to be introduced to us or to Icarus Witch or to Cauldron. That's very cool, and hopefully that's going to keep that cycle going.
So are you
coming
up to the New York area?
Oh, yeah. July the 26th will be at B.B. King's.
Awesome. I'll have to mark that on my calendar or send me a heads up because I definitely want to check you out.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I will, man. The tour starts July 25th.
Yeah.
In Baltimore at the Soundstage, and then we're going to New York and then Massachusetts, and we're going to end up playing Montreal, Ottawa, and all over the state, Chicago, you know, Detroit, all the way around to the West Coast, and through, you know, California, I mean, everywhere, man. It's going everywhere.
Yeah, definitely. Give me a heads
Florida.
Up when you come up here because, you know, maybe we can get together or something after the show.
Yeah, oh, for sure, man. For
That'd
sure.
Great.
Yeah. We will be there. And we, you know, we played New York a few times before. We were there actually last year. So I'm excited. I love New York. I mean, it's always just a good
right.
time. I mean, you know, it's a fun town, man. I love it. Yeah. So, I'm excited. And plus, we're going to play a lot of places that we've never played.
Right.
So, because we've done tours in the States and we've also done a lot of sort of. We would do a tour, you know, for a week or two and then try to hit, like, weekend shows in places we didn't hit this sort of. But all that work has sort of built us up to us being a part, finally, of a big tour
right.
that's just going everywhere. So it makes it feel like, hey, it was worth it to me, you know. I mean, absolutely. I mean, it would have been worth it to me anyways. But, I mean, you know, it's nice to finally have this opportunity. So I'm very, very happy, and I'm really looking forward to doing it, and I hope that it will spread the traditional metal thing and let people know, hey, this is still going, and also give kids, younger kids, bands, the sort of like, hey, man, there's still people going to sort of take the torch and keep this thing going.
That's one of the reasons I wanted to get bands like you on here is like to give it some exposure because people don't even know you're out there, you know? So.
Well, hopefully, you know, hopefully soon that'll all change. And,
right.
You know, we're just excited because the good thing is with having Paul Di'Anno there, I mean, with the Maiden thing, I mean, there's a lot of kids who, thanks to, I guess, things like VH1 Classic or whatever, they sort
right.
of, now a lot of people are aware of all these things, and it seems like a lot of kids are, they're yearning for the experiences their parents had.
Exactly.
Because I guess they feel that today's music doesn't really have that kind of longevity
exactly.
that this stuff did. And it's not, it just doesn't have, it's not that classic feel. And so I think that there's a lot of people in the States who are looking for those bands and they just don't really know where to look or where to start. So what we really needed this whole time is an artist who has that kind of power to draw people.
Right.
To take the younger bands because, I mean, you look at bands like Maiden, and, you know, I love Maiden. I'm not trying to knock them, but, you know, they'll take bands that are on tour or, you know, a lot of other bands, too. That it's just like they'll sort of have these opening acts that are like that's not really, you know.
Exactly.
And I understand
exactly.
a lot of tours are buy on and whoever pays the money just gets on it and it doesn't even matter, and that's part of the problem if you ask me. But,
yep.
I mean, you need a package. To me, this package is perfect.
Yeah, no, it's a good package from what you're telling me here.
I want to make sure that everybody, you know, comes and checks us out on tour this summer. I mean, we just can't wait to get out there and do it, you know. And it's really a trip to me to be out with, you know, going out with Paul Di'Anno and plus Icarus Witch and Cauldron, who have been our great friends for so long. It's
exactly.
It's just kind of hard to believe because our bands have played together a bunch, and we're, like, really, really close, all of us. So it's it's really a surprise.
Which is actually
kind of
funny because, you know, you're all doing the same thing, and yet you're separated by so many miles. I mean, you're actually separated by countries, technically. And yet, you know, because you're doing the same thing. So, you know, you're out on the same tours, you're doing the same gigs, and, you know, damn it, you're all friends, which is cool. You know, that's something
we are, man. I mean, well, like, take the guys in Cauldron. I know I actually met Jason from Icarus Witch and Jason Decay from Cauldron, which then he was in Goathorn.
Right.
We were all at a festival in Cleveland in 2003, BWBK Fest for Brave
right.
Word, Bloody Knuckles. You know, we just went. I mean, we just went to go and hang out and see the bands and everything. And Goathorn was playing, and they were all just there, and we kind of started talking. And it's like, yeah, I've got a band called Widow. It's like, oh, I've heard your band, and we all have sort of heard of each other, you know?
Right.
And I know, like, when I met Jason Decay, it was like one of those people that it's like immediate best friends, you know? It's like
right.
you've known this person your whole life, and because he was just kind of like the Canadian version of us, you know? I mean, it's like, he said A, and we didn't, but, I mean, you know, other than that, everything was pretty much the same, and, I mean, I just, man, we just sort of never, it's like we were immediately best friends, and we haven't looked back since, and the same way with, you know, Jason and Quinn, and, you know, guys from Icarus Witch, which now there's a couple of guys in Icarus Witch that I've not met. They've got a new lineup. You know, they're kind of like us. If things
well,
can go pretty quick. Yeah, we're solid with our lineup now. So, you know, I think things are going to stay the way they are. But no, those guys at Icarus Witch are very cool guys. And that was the same way that I met Jason, you know, Jason Myers.
Yeah.
It was kind of like he had a booth set up and we talked. And it's just kind of funny because we didn't exactly plan. It's not like we all got together on a big conference call and said,
right.
let's tour together, you know. But, I mean, the way it's wound up happening, it was just, it's merciful fate, I tell you.
Right.
It's like it's meant to be, if I can sound cheesy, but we're pleased. I mean, this is a perfect lineup. This is exactly, if someone said you can pick any lineup, obviously other than saying, of course, we'd want to do an arena tour with
right.
Judas Priest, but, I mean, this is like a perfect package here, in my
yeah.
opinion.
Yeah.
There's just, it's absolutely perfect. So, we're just very, very pleased. So, I'm looking forward to getting out this summer and meeting all the traditional metal fans of North America. Man, and that's the thing, it's a strong package in the sense that, I mean, you've got the people who maybe are newer to traditional metal, maybe like the newer bands because
right.
we have something different to offer. Then you got Paul Di'Anno who's
right.
drawing a wide range of maybe some older folks who love Maiden but don't leave the house for much which I'm becoming myself, I must say, but you know, it's like take something major to get you out of the house. So, I mean, that's a cool thing. I mean, I know, like, I went to see, when I was 15, I went to see Clash of the Titans. And
right.
it was like Slayer, Megadeth, Anthrax, you know, all together.
Yep.
All those bands at a big moment in their career. It's just, it's like you said, you get to see them all at once. I mean,
yeah.
it's just, that's going to, you're not missing that. I mean, if a band comes to town and it's like on a Tuesday or something, you're like, oh God, I can't go. But when you put together the right package, man, people are not going to miss it.
Of course,
and
right.
I really hope for this summer that this, and I feel definitely that it is, this package is strong enough to sort of everybody, it's just going to bring everybody out. So
we'll be looking forward to that.
Just an update on that we're discussing. The tour has been updated. There's been some changes. So now Widow will be touring with Icarus Witch and White Wizard, and they'll be up here in New York at Webster Hall on August 18th. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Chris Bennett of Widow. Coming up, we discuss nightlife, life's blood, philosophy on music, simplifying technique, using first takes, and the importance of shooting from the hip. When you're on Third Eye Cinema. Out Nightlife, which was a very strong record. I mean, the title track, Beware the Night, I'll Make You a Star. You even had a really good Kiss cover for I Stole Your Love. So how had
yeah.
things changed between On Fire and Nightlife beyond the obvious personnel shift?
The change from On Fire to Nightlife, we wanted a different sound in the sense that I guess we felt like the guitar sounded, had almost like a process sound to them. We
right.
wanted a more natural, raw, like Marshall sound
right.
to it. Believe it or not, and this is something, and I forgot to mention this to you, believe it or not, on Fire and Nightlife, I actually played the drums on those albums.
Really?
Because when I first started playing music, I was a drummer.
Really?
Like when I was a teenager, yeah. And I switched to guitar. I started jamming on the guitar player that I jammed with then on his guitar. And I was writing a riff, you know, for our band like in high school. And then I was like, hey, I can do this. And then I switched to guitar that way. But during the recording of On Fire, we had lost our drummer. And then that drummer was gone after On Fire.
Right.
So we were in that position again with the recording. So I ended up having to play drums on both those albums. Even though those guys were pictured, Anthony on Fire and then Peter
right.
on the other album, I played on both of them. So a part of the impact of the album was what I was listening to at the time, and I was trying to put this stuff in. And I tried to change the drums around a little bit on Nightlife and
right.
do things that are a little more technical. And then we went from just real heavy, just sort of raw, like Marshall sound, as opposed to the Mesa Boogie sound we've been using.
Right.
And so that affected it.
So answer a question, since you've seen the reference around the lyrics. Is Beauty Queen about Lily?
No.
Okay.
It is actually about, believe it or not, it's about a porn star
named really?
Savannah. Yeah. who committed suicide.
Yes, I remember the story.
And you know the story of her where it was this like super gorgeous girl. And she basically, I think she got in an accident and her face was kind of messed up and she couldn't live with it and she killed herself.
Right.
I was really intrigued by that story, and I wanted to write that. So that song's about her.
Okay.
And to me, that's like my favorite song on the record. That's one of them anyways. I really like Cult of Life, too, which
right.
that song is about like the People's Temple, like Jim Jones and
right.
that whole thing.
I actually thought that you wrapped it up after that album because you've been on a steady schedule. Like every 2 years, there's another album, just like bands used to do back in the old days. So
mm-hmm.
why was there a 4-year hiatus before the new record?
Well, I'll tell you why. For one thing, we didn't actually do that on purpose, but when Nightlife was done, we sort of didn't really know exactly what to do. I guess it seemed like interest in the band was sort of going down, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I just felt like we needed something to sort of kick us in the ass. Then all of a sudden, it was kind of like this whole traditional thing exploded, and suddenly Widow was like mentioned as, oh man, these guys are one of the leaders of this thing and all this.
Right.
And like I said, I'm really grateful for that, but we've just been doing what we've been doing this whole time. We've never worried about that shit.
Exactly.
Well, I guess we sort of knew with the way things are, we needed a better album than we've ever done.
Right.
We needed something. I mean, I just knew this whole time that we needed something better, even to sort of reignite the band after Nightlife, because you get this feeling like I say, when I say interest was waning, it's not that we weren't interested in Widow.
Right.
We never have ever looked away and wanted to keep going. But I guess what I mean by that is it kind of like you get to a point like, what do we do now, you know?
Right.
And I mean, when the whole traditional metal thing took off, suddenly we were getting all these show opportunities
right.
that we'd never had. So we were playing a much more rigorous schedule than ever.
Right.
I mean, we were finally getting out and playing places. I mean, you know, playing in Germany, playing in Canada, all over the place. I think that with that reinvigoration of the band, we wanted to step things up and really make sure that our next album was better. I wanted to make an album that was better than all of our other albums put together. And with Life's Blood, we really do feel that we've done that. We feel like we've made the best Widow album we could make. And, you know, it's really sort of just, man, it's done better for us than any of the other albums. I mean, it's just generated so much interest in us, and we're thrilled, man.
I'm actually a couple questions away from addressing exactly what you just said. So,
but, great.
Now, you know, you're back in a big way with Life's Blood. So the one thing I noticed, and you had mentioned this before, is that there's a bit of a shift in the lyrical focus. So what motivated this?
Again, that kind of stagnation that we felt after Nightlife.
Right.
I mean, we took a little break from the band for a while.
Okay.
Because, see, I've always written, I mean, this was like in 2007. We played a couple gigs, and then we kind of just chilled out for a minute. And, see, I write the music and the lyrics.
Right.
And eventually you get to this point. It's not like every day I can sit down and go, well, I'm going to write an awesome song today, you know.
Right.
You don't really know what's going to happen. And the
exactly.
more and more songs you write, the harder it gets.
Right.
And I think what made me kind of personally stagnate a little bit was the fact that, you know, you just kind of go, man, you know, what do I really want to do? Where is this thing going? And I'm the type of person, I don't want to just like, okay, we need another album, so I spit out 10 songs,
exactly.
and then we go on tour. I feel like a lot of bands did that, and
yep.
I feel like it ruined a lot of great bands. When you
yes,
look at bands
did.
And go, oh, they were really great on their first three, and then what happened? See, I don't want to be that. I would honestly rather quit. I mean,
right.
I would rather go the at-the-gates route and just go out, like, kicking ass, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't want to just put out some album where people go, yeah, man, Widow was really cool, but then, this one. and to me, I sort of, I'm like, man, I was scratching my head. I'm like, we've got to do something better, you know?
Right.
We've got to turn it up. I mean, because it kind of felt like, you know, it just sort of felt like we just didn't know what to do. We've always wanted to sort of take the band like a step to the left, you know, just like having
right.
Lily in, and then we did Nightlife without her, and then it wasn't sort of like, well, do you want to get another girl? And just, you know, to me, it would have lose interest. It would just be so unnatural, and that's not what we're about. And we knew we had to sort of reignite that spark. And
right.
I had a few songs written right after Nightlife that I felt were really good songs, and they were much simpler.
Right.
And that direction really felt good, and it felt natural, and that's kind of, we started going with that, and then ultimately started recording. But the more shows that we were getting as a result of the traditional metal boom made the process take a little longer. But also, us being such harsh critics on ourselves made it take a little longer, too, because we knew, hey, man, you know, we've got to do something that's really
right.
better here. But yeah. with that being said, I don't want anybody who is a Widow fan that might listen to this to worry, because believe me, we're going to keep going. We're going to always make sure that what we deliver is the best product we possibly can, you know,
right.
for ourselves and for the people who supported us. I mean, seriously.
Exactly. So I noticed you added some modulation as well. I'm not usually a fan of what I called the lazy man's transposition. A lot of metal bands used to jack things up a whole tone or into a major key just to piss everyone off. I think the idea was to make it more strident, like at the end of Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer, but it never really works. But you did it on a few tracks, and you managed to make it work. You know, it's not very blatant. I think the only time I ever noticed this being done where it didn't make me, like, gnash my teeth before this album was with Lee's Eyes, who are very good with their songcraft and production. So I was actually impressed with just that, the fact that you were using something that I usually can't stand as a technique. And yet, you know, I was like, okay, it works.
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean now. I'm
so
sorry, that's my lack of music school. I didn't even totally understand the question.
Usually that's right.
Oh, I've got you now.
But
I know what you mean.
But, you know, with you guys on this album and, you know, Leaves Us, that's the only times I ever heard this done where it's like, okay, you know, if that works, it's fine. Because usually...
Well, that's cool, man. I'm glad to hear you say that, man. And, I mean, I think some of that with us sort of came from... Well, let me tell you this, first of all. The hardest thing that I've done was write the songs for Lifeblood up till this point, and I'll tell you why. Because in the past, I always sort of had some kind of, like, crutch
right.
to make a song come together. Like, I could always just go, okay, well, we'll play this technical part here,
right.
you know, like with some stuff on Midnight Strikes. Or, you know, if I didn't really know exactly how to make a song sort of come together, I could have a part where I was screaming,
right?
You know, because then you don't have to worry about, you know what I mean, that can tie you into another section.
Right.
With this album, stripping it to the bare bones, and it, the whole thing being about the song, and that's it. That was hard, man. There was no crutch there. I mean, there was
exactly.
no, there was nothing. When I kind of struggled on the arrangement of something, I couldn't go, okay, well, I'll do a part where I do like some growling here, and that'll
right.
lead us back into this. I mean, I had nothing. I had to just, it was either,
exactly.
it was like, you either kick ass or you go home. I mean, it was
yeah.
that simple.
And actually,
and
the funny thing is, I know exactly what you're talking about, because I've always played, you know, I had, it was a Gibson or Epiphone, but it was kind of like a knockoff of a Jackson. And so, you know, I had that kind of a sound, and then I had an Ibanez, but again, it was like a Strat kind of thing, and, you know, 24 frets, and the Floyd Rose tremolo, the whole deal. And so you can really get speed working up on it. You can do all this fancy stuff. And my last guitar that I just got, and which is, you know, my main guitar now, is more of like a Les Paul model. Again, it's an Ibanez. It's one of those Art Core series, like the ART300.
Oh, yeah, but, those look really cool, man. They play good,
too. Oh, it's great. It's great, and it's got the active pickups in it. But the trick is that it plays very, very differently. So it picks up everything you do, and you can't do some of that fast stuff. You have to, like, I had to like relearn how to play almost to play this thing properly.
Man, and, I know what you mean.
You know, it's exactly the same thing, because all of a sudden now you're like, whoa, I better dial this back, because, you know, like I was telling you about the solos for the ending theme, it's like you start playing some of that fast stuff. Okay, yeah, it might sound good to your ear, but then you listen back like, no, that's not working.
No. And that was hard. I mean, that was really hard for me, because I am a very, very sort of anal perfectionist.
Right.
Like, if it's not good enough, and I'm all about the vibe, too.
Right.
Like, I know, believe it or not, a whole bunch of what was recorded on Life's Blood was the first take. Like,
yep.
I didn't even make a demo. I told Johnny records us. We record at his house. He's got a home studio. And I was like, man, the first time I ever even attempted putting these songs to, this is going to make me sound old. I would say to tape, but, you know, it's on the computer.
Right.
But the first time we ever considered putting it to tape, I mean, that was my first run at it, other than just jamming, messing around on my couch.
And the same thing. That's exactly the way I play. And, like, when you hear the music for the show, those are first takes. And the solos that I end up using the most of, it was take one and take two. I mean, you know.
Well, you know, it's all downhill from there, man. I mean, to me, I'm a real one-take guy. It's like, take 57 is not going to have the energy to take one day.
Exactly.
It's not.
Even if you're playing
you
better,
don't capture
if you
one.
Lost something. You
yeah,
know,
exactly, man. You don't... I'm not one of these. I'm sort of influenced by a lot of the 80s heroes, the 70s and 80s, you know, like Van Halen and Randy Rhoads and all these guys I love. And they just sort of played, they shot from the hip, man. They just played what they played, and it was just, it is what it is.
Exactly.
And that's kind of how I want to be. And, you know, I'm not one of these note for note. Like, I mean, man, when you see Widow live, it's like a different show every night. I play what I feel.
Exactly.
I don't play it note for note. So if you go to see us in New York, you know, and then you come to Boston the next night, you're going to get a different show, man.
Exactly.
And that's what I'm into. And now, with that being said, I'm not going to pull out a harmonica or anything, but I mean, I'm just, you'll still know what song it is.
I had a friend who was in a rival band back when I had a band, you know, this was years and years ago now, and he used to make fun of Yngwie, if you can believe that, because he's like, oh, you know, that guy, he's no good because every night he goes out there and he plays his solos completely different. I'm like, so?
Hey, that's what I love about it. Yeah, that's what I love about it.
That's the whole point. You know,
yeah,
the
man.
Solo, and everyone wants to stay home and play the record. You know?
Exactly, man. Yeah, that's how I feel, because that's boring. I mean, like, man, you know, you go see Yngwie, if you see him three times, you've seen three different shows.
Exactly.
I mean, you know you're getting something special. You know that night, that moment in time is something special. And you know what's funny to me? Like, okay, take the Randy Rhoads tribute.
Yep.
I actually prefer, like, Mr. Crowley is one of my all-time favorite songs.
Right.
I honestly prefer his solos on that tribute album to... And I mean no disrespect to Blizzard of Oz.
No,
I feel without that album, melodic metal would not be what it is. I worship that album. Don't get me wrong. But let me just say that when I heard the tribute, it's like, man, I almost think I prefer this, these solos to the Blizzard of Oz album.
It's true.
I mean, because it's just... That was that guy's heart. That was real.
I was a huge Randy Rhoads fan, too. I still am, actually. And it's the same thing. When I learned, you know, some of those songs, because, you know, I wanted to learn from the best, I didn't sit there and go with the record and say, okay, I want to play just like he plays on Blizzard of Oz. I kept pulling from tribute. I was like, oh, well, in the solo, he does this live, so I just switched it to that. And, you know, people would hear me playing these songs, like, wow, where'd you get that? I don't play like that. Well, because he plays like that when he plays live, you know?
That's why I had total respect for Jakey Lee. When he joined Ozzy, you watch videos of him playing, He did certain parts that it's like you could tell he paid utmost respect to Rhoads, but then he would change things around a little bit and put his own stamp on it, and I was like, that's cool.
That's the way
you know,
it works.
Zach Wilde's really good, but he was like a Rhodes freak, and he kind of went note for note Rhodes.
Exactly. He gets too serious.
You know?
And the thing with Jake, like you're saying, is, okay, you know, you give him some touch points so you know, okay, he's in this part of the solo. He does enough that you know he knows what he's doing. But then he's going to go and say his own, you know, the whole point is expressing yourself, you know, because who gives a damn if you can play like, you know, Joe down the street? You know, you're not him, you know?
And Rhodes, man, those are big shoes to fill. And I think Jake knew coming in.
Yeah.
And, man, when Brad Gillis filled in for Rhodes after the accident, that man is absolutely unreal. He had a week to learn all that stuff.
Exactly.
And if you watch that concert from Diary of a Madman with Brad Gillis on guitar, you know, from Night Ranger, that guy, he learned that in a week and played that good. Holy shit. I can't believe he did that.
He's the original
two-hand
guy. You know, before that got popular, right? Oh, let's everybody do these two-hand stuff for the whole solo. He was the original guy doing that. Well, he's a good player.
Yeah, dude,
he's very underrated.
All respect to him. I've seen him live. We played with Night Ranger at Rocklahoma. We played with a whole bunch of bands. It was, man, God, you could just about name somebody from the 80s. I think they played. but I watched Brad Gillis. And, I mean, no disrespect to Night Ranger. Man, they had some killer songs, really. But, I mean, I just sit there looking at that guy going, think about what he did with Ozzy.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, man.
It's funny because I always felt that way, like, you know, this guy's too good for this band, you know, because they were so radio-friendly.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, he's a good player.
Oh,
and
he
I think the same thing
he
with
is.
Neil Sean with Journey. You know, Neil Sean is a better player than Journey, you know, the music merits.
Oh, yeah, man, he is. He's amazing. And you know, but, I like I said, I'm not knocking Zach Wilde.
No,
I thought he
good.
Was great.
Yeah.
And I love No Rest for the Wicked, killer album. But, I mean, man, I love The Ultimate Sin. I'm just a major Ozzy fan in general. I mean, at least up till No More Tears. After that, it's like, you know.
Yeah. I feel the same
but,
way.
I mean,
but
No More Tears I liked a lot. But, I mean, from Blizzard to No Rest for the Wicked is like, I purely worship those. I mean,
right. Great
stuff.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Chris Bennett of Widow. Coming up, we discuss some influences, the metal scene today, and flooring as a three-piece. I'm here on Third Eye Cinema. Getting back to the album here, Lady Twilight, was this a rewritten Beware the Night? Because it sounds very close.
No. I think if you you remember the guitar limitations I thought about?
Right.
No, I mean, I really, Lady Twilight was just something that I messed around with. I'd had that song for a few years. And it was one of those things where I guess I kind of got sort of stumped with it because I had written a couple of the riffs and I couldn't really get it to go anywhere. And then suddenly it sort of just went. It does have similarities to that, yeah, but really a lot of our songs have similarities. And I think part of it is just me not – I sort of have found, like, our thing and I just kind of, like, go with it. It just kind of happens naturally.
You know?
Yeah, and you know, I don't really, I really don't know a lot about music, but I know how to like make a Widow song.
Exactly.
And
you know how to play it. So
with that being
play.
Said, yeah, man. With that being said, we sort of do try to alter things within what we consider like the Widow territory, I guess.
Right.
You know, I mean, chances are I'm not going to come out with some song that sounds like Southern rock or anything. But
right.
I mean,
well,
you know, that
thing,
we were
you know.
we. Yeah, but we would have an influence of even stuff like that. I mean, you know, I like Molly Hatchet, for Christ's sake. But, I mean, we're going to end up still, no matter what, ultimately sounding like Widow, no matter what weird thing we
you know,
do. So.
In fact, it's almost like you distilled the last two albums into one to get Life's Blood, because there's some of the same ground being covered, but with better production and more polish. It's like, you know, despite the fact that I like all three of those albums, and On Fire in particular, I think Life's Blood works a bit better as a whole. I mean, there's really no weak tracks on the album. You know, it's the sort of record that's – it's like it's over before you realize you've gone through 12 tracks. I'm like, oh, well, start it again from the top. And that's happened to me
three
times.
Yeah, man, that's what we were hoping for, like Rain and Blood or something, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess where how that came to be. See, what we've always done when we made an album, we always sort of examine where our head is at that moment in time. Because it's like, I want albums to be like a moment in time.
Right.
You know, you probably would never see us re-record an album. I know some bands do that to get out of contracts or whatever. We would probably just write a new album instead of doing
right.
that. Because I like the stamp like of that. You know what the people were feeling at that particular moment.
Right.
Like, I would never, ever care to listen to an album of a band I like where they re-recorded the album.
Right.
That just, to me, is, even if it sounds like shit, that might be what I like about it, you know?
And, you know, the funny thing is, Borzen just did that, and it's terrible.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's just no need for that to me. And
yep.
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to do that. So with Lifeblood, we there were things about Nightlife that we, you know, we didn't really like. I mean, we felt, well, not to say we didn't like it. I love the album, but we felt like, okay, I don't want to do this again.
Right.
So with this one, we wanted to sort of have a more clarity in the sound that maybe we felt like we had lost a little bit. Like
right.
Nightlife was just a little bit too raw on the guitar, so I wanted to clean that up a little bit.
Right.
But still have the aggressive side of the rawness of Nightlife. But then a little bit of the, you know, the energy that Midnight Strikes had. Because there's a lot of people who say that's our best album and they don't care about any of the other ones.
Right.
You
yeah,
know? And so, yeah. And we kind of wanted to just take what we like best about the others, but also sort of trim off what I felt were the excesses of
yeah,
cause the
other
ones.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It's like you distilled the last couple albums, but trimmed the fat, you know, and you made it a little better.
Right.
So it's like, you know.
Streamline it. Streamline
yeah.
it is a good word. We wanted to streamline it. And with the lyrics, I wanted the focus to be, again, I kind of thought, okay, man, we've done all these albums where there's, like, vocals flying at you from all over the place by, like, 10 different people, it seems like.
Right.
With the lyrics being more personal, we wanted to have one voice singing this to you where you could sort of latch on to that
right.
and follow it instead of like a new vocal flying out of every direction.
Right.
So we felt like we wanted to just again, that was part of the streamlining process, you know, it was to sort of make it where you could follow this one vocal and you just really go into what we're saying and everything. And the good thing with us is we're all pretty much, we all usually kind of land on the same page.
Right.
And I mean, obviously, even though I write the music and the lyrics, I mean, Johnny writes a lot for the bass and Peter with the drums. I mean, it takes all of us. We have a good chemistry between the three of us.
Right.
You know, it's not like I'm here like saying, oh, yeah, well, I make the decisions. You know, it's not like that. I mean, it's all three of us together as a whole that makes the,
right.
the magic, if I could sound corny for a minute. But,
and,
I mean, to me, I feel that with this one, our heads were kind of in this spot.
Right.
And that's where we went. And I'm glad that we did because
it worked.
It worked. And it came out, to me, overall, what we were looking for as far as turning things up.
Right.
And we wanted a better album cover. We wanted a better, and, you know, we got this
right.
artist, Timo Wirtz.
Right.
From Germany, who is a big deal in Germany. I mean, this guy's like, you know, at art galleries displaying his stuff. I mean, the dude's
that's
really good.
And,
thank you. And he made this cover, and I'm like, wow, you know, it was not what I'd expected at all. It looked nothing like what I really thought it would, but
right.
it's very cool. And Pure Steel has really helped because they've helped us, you know, do things like this interview with you and, you know, get a lot
right.
more sort of promotion out there to a lot more people. And man, it's just, it's really nice after all these years of us working so hard to see so many more people interested in the band and appreciating. And I think also appreciating the fact that they know we're not like a trendy band. They know
right.
we're not sort of like, oh, traditional metal is popular. And I think our fans also know that when this stuff, if it was to not be the, which it kind of already has lost its trendiness, I guess, in some
right.
ways. But, I mean, they know that Widow's still going to be going, and there's something to be said for that, man. I mean, we exist outside of the trends, man. We just do
right.
what we feel and what we have fun with, and that's it. And I think people appreciate that. I mean, it's just an honesty thing. They
yeah.
know we're serious and for real and not
and,
just,
you know, I'm hearing a bit of the Crimson Glory influence you've often mentioned here as well, particularly on In Dreams. And you mentioned at one point Def Leppard around High and Dry. Now, I didn't
oh,
care
yeah.
for them at all past Pyromania, but those first few records are killer. And I can actually hear
hell
that
yeah.
you know, stuff like Lady Strange definitely comes out in your music.
Thank you. Oh, dude, I love that song, Lady Strange. Yeah.
I know,
oh, man,
favorite.
I'm totally into Def Leppard. They were a big influence on me as a young kid. I mean, they were one of the first bands I got into.
Right.
And Crimson Glory, oh, man, I absolutely worship those first two Crimson Glory albums.
Yeah.
And, man, we were lucky enough. We have played with Leatherwolf and Crimson Glory.
Awesome.
And, yes. And, see, we played with Leatherwolf in Kansas City.
Right.
And I was very excited about that, and I ended up hanging out with all the people in the band, and oh my God, I was so excited, and I actually told Johnny, I said, now if we could just play with Crimson Glory, you know? Like, and then 2 years later, we were able to do that, because we were supposed to play a show in Atlanta with John Oliva's Pain.
Right.
It was a festival in Atlanta, and I was excited about that, man. I mean, I was Sabotage and, you know, everything, so God, I was tore up about that. Well, John Oliva had to cancel,
right.
And they said, oh, we'll announce the replacement headliner, blah, 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 and then they announced Crimson Glory, and I was like, oh, my God. So we played with them, and it was just, man, they were really, really great. And, I mean, the first Crimson Glory and Transcendence are both two albums that were very important to me. And,
exactly.
I mean, just really great albums from start to finish, and they... To me, those albums still hold up. They still sound good.
Yeah. And the best thing about it is, you know, you talk to your average metalhead who wasn't really hardcore on it, they won't know who any of these bands are that we're talking about. I mean, you know, this is pretty big and deep for Leatherwolf and Crimson Glory. I love these bands even back then. But, you know, this it's not like the everyday, like, oh, man, Crew's cool, and I like Maiden. They don't even know who the hell these guys are.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're right. You're right. And believe me, I want to shout it from every rooftop I can for people to check out these bands. And,
exactly.
You know, and I got to say, that's really a cool thing in Europe, because
they've always
it's not
been,
so much
yeah.
Maiden. Yeah, they're like, yeah, how about Omen and Overkill? And
exactly.
You know,
and it's always Europe. Been Europe and Japan. Those two places have been like the bastions of metal when it was totally dead here for, you know, 15, 20 years. So, you know,
yeah, man, but, you know, but I'll tell you this. And I don't know if it's from the internet or what it is, but a lot of kids now, it's really surprising because kids are starting to get it here in the States.
I've noticed
and
that. Like...
I hope that things like hopefully our tour this summer and more bands like that are, you know, getting exposed
right.
to this thing. Because there's great bands that are, well, like a lot of the bands that we're friends with, like, I mean, some of our good friends like Cauldron, Icarus Witch,
right.
TTD,
right.
Vulture, which is Ryan from Municipal Waste, and Dave from TTD, that's their
right.
band. All these bands are doing stuff now, and they're part of the more current metal scene, and I know those guys like, well, like Ryan Waste and Scott from TTD and Jason Decay.
Right.
They're wearing those shirts of bands
right.
that are, you know, they're not wearing, you're not going to see them. I mean, maybe not, you might see them, but I mean, I guess they got to do laundry sometime, but it's not like they're doing a Maiden shirt every day, or they're wearing shirts of bands, and these kids are sort of going, oh, man, let me check out Warlord, or check out Omen, or, you know, bands like that. And
exactly.
That's killer, man. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that really, because, man, I mean, yeah, Maiden is great and Priest is great. I love those bands. Always will. But like you said, there is a lot of other stuff out there and a lot of stuff that's worth your time.
I mean, one of my favorite bands from back then is Obsession. And I talk to people and they don't know who the hell they are.
Man, Obsession. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to get Mike DeCira for the show, so I'm hoping that we can get this rolling.
And he's a great singer, man. He was really good with Loudness, too.
With Loudness and with Yngwie. I mean, you know, this guy is, like, top-notch. But people don't know who he is. It's amazing.
He
I'm
is.
Like, what, you're a metalhead? You don't know who this is? Are you kidding me?
Well, I think that people are really, man, things are really coming around here.
Yeah.
And, I mean, look, hey, man, and I hear people sometimes complain about the States, and it's not going to overnight become Germany, you know?
No,
I mean, but what it's taken is kids who are becoming lifers, I mean, because these
right.
are the people who really spread the word. I mean, this type of music's a lifestyle, man. It's not,
exactly.
it's just not that way with other types of music. And
no, not at all.
I think that's fortunate for metal's sake in the era that we're in today of everything being so digital.
Right.
Because a metal fan living it for life, man, they want a Cauldron bottle opener. And, you know, they want
right.
to have all these things. I mean, it still means something to them. Whereas a guy who's into, you know, certain other types of pop music or whatever, it's not a lifestyle for them. It's just kind of something they listen to in the car. I mean, it's just not a whole lifestyle. And that's fortunate for metal, in my opinion, at this day and age, because I think metal is going to last, man.
Yeah.
Because you're always going to have people who feel this way. I mean, it's not manufactured. It's not out of a box. I mean, it's just...
I've got to say, Judgment Day is one of the best anti-drug songs I've heard since Master of Puppets. I've got at least one friend who's still with us, but if you look at his life and the direction it's taken, it's pretty clear that he's been a fairly serious casualty of that lifestyle. So who or what led you to pen this one?
Well, you know, man, listen, we party. I mean, you know,
we're
a party band. I mean, you know, we drink and, you know, do all that stuff, but... What that song is really trying to say, and I really appreciate you saying that, man, that's cool, because I love Master of Puppets. We have seen people basically just destroy their life, friends of ours.
Exactly.
Take things too far. Man, you know, we're all for partying and everything like that.
Sure.
But
you can't be a metalhead without it.
You don't want to kill yourself, man. I mean, you know, and it's just not worth it. And that's kind of what that thing is saying. It's like, hey, man, have a good time. But, I mean, anything that cripples your life in that direction, I mean, that's not good.
Exactly.
And we're not for that, man, you know, not at all.
Right.
And especially, I guess, you know, as we get older, it's funny because Nightlife was an album totally about partying and our experiences getting out on the road for the first time. And then that song was kind of like some of the darker shit that we saw
with
people.
Exactly.
And, you know, we don't want to see people dying, man. I mean,
of
we want to
not.
See them, you know, having fun, man, and, you know, sort of keep yourself together. And,
exactly.
you know, I mean, have we used drugs? Yes, we have. But, I mean, have we done a lot of bad shit? Absolutely. But, I mean, there's sort of like a line you've got to realize, man, this, before I become a complete, like, useless person in society or just a, you know, whatever, there's got to be an end point, you know.
Exactly.
Or to not be dead, you know.
Right. And
that's,
you know,
that's really where that came from.
And Take Hold of the Night, that's one of your more aggressive tracks, and it's actually one of my favorite of your solos, because I love that build with the harmony lead acting as a bridge, and then you let loose for a bit and wail, and then you go back to the harmony leads again. So it's always just been you on guitars?
No, Johnny was on the other guitar.
Okay.
But we kind of went to a three-piece. He switched to bass when we couldn't, after Johnny, we couldn't really find a bass player. But I'll tell you that it's been a lot better. We've sound a lot better as a three-piece, and I can still pull off the songs and make it sound great. I think we sound better than we ever sounded, really.
Yeah, because, I mean, on the record, you use a lot of harmony and dual leads, and then you get the dual vocal, so it's like, how are you going to pull that off as a three-piece in a live situation?
Well, now, some of the songs, I'm basically playing, like, the melody on guitar, and then in other parts, I kind of just play both parts, like, in a chord. And I've also got all kinds of effects and shit with my pedal, but, I mean, we didn't really plan on being a three-piece when we recorded the album. That must be said. But with that being said, now that we've done it, we sound better as a live band than we've ever sounded, and people just seem like they love us more than ever now live, and they just go crazy in it. I think a lot of that's due to the fact that we, you know, just have an overall tighter sound as a three-piece.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of power trios out there, especially from Canada. I mean, Cauldron's one of them.
Absolutely.
You know, you got Rush, you got Triumph. I mean, it can work. It's just, you know, since you use so many of these, you know, dual leads and things, I'm like, well, how's this going to work? How are you going to do this?
Well, trust me, and you'll see July 26th. it works. I mean, it works better. If you could have seen us before, I mean, it's so much better now. And also, to me, even though this was by accident, it's kind of leading us into another new era for Widow, setting up for the next album, because we're going to do something different again. You know, I mean, this time more by accident, but, I mean, you'll get a different Widow next time. So, I mean, you know, we're happy. We're very happy about the way things have turned out. So, but Take Hold of the Night, man, is just, that song was just more of how I was feeling lyric-wise. I mean, it's a positive thing about just sort of taking life and going on with what you want to do, what you believe in your heart, you know, whatever that may be.
Is there anything you want to plug, or did you want to point your listeners to a website, or...?
Yeah, man, absolutely. Go to widowusa.com, or you can find us on Facebook under Widow, and also we're on Twitter and all that other stuff. I think it's at Widow the Band is Twitter. And we got our new album, Life's Blood, on Pure Steel Records. It's out on vinyl now, too, which is our first vinyl. And we're hitting North America starting July 25th with Paul Di'Anno, man, and Icarus Witch and Cauldron. I mean, that's going to be the traditional metal tour of the summer. I hope to see everybody, man. We're very excited. Thanks to all the Widow fans for the support, man. Thank you. Thank you all very much. It means the absolute world to us. You can believe that.
So with that, Chris, I'd like to thank you for joining us here on Third Eye Cinema, and we'd love to have you
thank
back
you
to talk
so
to the
much.
Next album when that comes out.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, man. It's been a pleasure. It's been great talking to you, and yeah, we'll be back anytime.
And to close out part one of our interview with Chris, here's one last track from Widow. This is Take Hold of the Night. Gutierrez of Mortillery, and in 2 weeks on week 24 of Third Eye Cinema, SOV slasher maestro Kim Ritter. You'd like to see.
you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician who'd like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com or visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema, brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. If you missed any part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience.